All right, we'll flip over to Mark chapter 2. Mark chapter 2. We're going to read there in just a second. So there's this camp that we go to with the youth group. It's called Uplift. It's at Harding University, and it's my favorite youth event that we do. We do a lot of things, and golf and retreats. Like, I love those as well, but I especially love Uplift at Harding. I went to it growing up, and went to it when I interned, went to it when we lived in Memphis, and then have enjoyed bringing our group here in Mobile to Uplift at Harding. And I'm actually on the committee that kind of helps plan this. And so when we plan this event, they have us meet a couple times throughout the year to plan it. And usually we'll go to Harding for these meetings. And a couple years ago, we had one of these meetings at Harding. And so I had drove in to Searcy, which is a really fun drive if you've ever made that. And then, so we made that drive to Searcy. And I got in, actually stopped in Memphis the night before, and I got up really early to get to the meeting that was going to start that morning at about 9. So I left really early, and I didn't eat breakfast. And so I got to that meeting, and I was really, really hungry. And so I'm sitting at this meeting, and there's a number of us sitting around these tables, and the part of the school that runs this, they had some college students that work with them throughout the year. And so they're like, hey, we're going to go get you guys some breakfast, which I was like, this is amazing. I haven't eaten breakfast. And so they said, they're going to come around and get what you want. They're going to go over to Starbucks over here and get you something from there so you can get a coffee and something to eat. So the guy next to me, they come to him and they say, hey, can you get me some specialty coffee? I can't remember what he said, but he said, and some banana bread. I was like, banana bread? Sounds pretty good. I mean, pretty much anything would have sounded good. And so I asked him, I said, is this banana bread really good? He said, oh, it's good. And so the girl came to me and I said, can you get me a coffee and some banana bread? And so she takes everybody's order and she goes and she leaves to go pick it up at Starbucks. And so our meeting starts, and I'll be honest, I was having a lot of trouble focusing on what was going on in the meeting. All I could think about was this banana bread. I mean, the future possibility of this banana bread and myself meeting was the only thing that was getting me through this meeting that we were in the first place. And so I was thinking about this banana bread a lot. I had visions of hundreds of banana breads in my mind. I was salivating over it. I was just thinking about, man, I cannot wait until this banana bread comes into my presence and I can eat it. And so finally, what felt like an eternity, what was probably 30 minutes, she comes back into the room with everybody's drinks and food, and she finally gets to me and she hands me my coffee. And I lean over to her and I said, hey, where's my banana bread? And she said, sorry, they were out. And I was so disappointed. And I kind of smiled and said, that's okay. But what I wanted to say was, so you brought me nothing? That's what I wanted to say. You brought me nothing? Like, listen, I will take anything in the carb section of the menu. I mean, I will take a strudel or a muffin or a scone, something. Bring me something, right? Don't bring me nothing. I will take a banana and a slice of bread. Bring me something because I'm hungry and I need you to bring me something, but brought me nothing. But I wasn't too upset. Like, this is a pretty good reason and excuse not to bring me this thing that I was wanting. She ran into a problem, right? They were out of banana bread. What I would have hoped is that she would have found some solution, though, to get around that and bring me something. But the obstacle that she ran into was a pretty reasonable one. They were out, and so that, in a sense, relieved her of her duty to bring me this banana bread. Have you ever found it where you have this task that you've been given, this thing that you need to do or supposed to do or want to do, and something comes up, an obstacle gets in your way, and because you've met this obstacle, it's kind of like, well, I guess I don't have to do it now. This past week, we were helping my parents get ready to move. My dad's going to go teach at Harding, and so my parents were starting to get their stuff ready to go to Searcy, and they're in their 60s, and I guess when you get into your 60s, you just have all this stuff. And so we were going through the attic and we were getting all this stuff together. And we were loading up this moving truck. And it came to a point in the moving truck where I thought that we were finished packing. It's like, there is no more room here. But my dad, and this I guess is a dad skill that I've not mastered yet, is kind of a Tetris master. And he was able to help me maneuver things. And I realized, oh, you can actually fit a lot more. So there's an extra hour of work. Fantastic, right? And so we found a way to make things work. And so here I thought we were done, but really, this obstacle of being finished, we found a way around it. And I think in some sense, whether it's getting somebody breakfast or getting ready to move, or whether it's something much more important and significant, if we have a task given to us or this job that we're supposed to do or this mission that we have, sometimes we can run into a situation where we experience an obstacle or a problem. And I think, unfortunately, we can sometimes decide, well, I guess I can't accomplish it. Oh, I hit this obstacle. Sorry, no banana bread. Sorry, no more luggage is here. Sorry, this person who you love and care about, you know, they're just not going to know Jesus. Have you ever experienced that? Somebody that you care about. Maybe you've spent Thanksgiving with them. And maybe it's somebody that you care about that does not know Jesus, does not have a relationship with them. And maybe you feel like, listen, I tried. Like, I put in a lot of effort. I've tried to be a good example, a living Bible to them, right? For them to see who Jesus is, but I just don't think it's going to work. Not going to happen. And I think sometimes we do this, where we meet an obstacle when it comes to ministry, when it comes to doing the work of the Lord in the church. We find ourselves bumping up into an obstacle, and we feel like, well, that's relieved me of my duty. I tried. And we have trouble finding a way around it. This morning, I want to look at a story that I think deals with this same issue, where we have some men that met an obstacle that could have ended the responsibility. But yet they found a way around it. They found a way through the roof. And so what I want to talk about this morning is, in our Christian lives, in our spiritual journeys, we can have goals and godly desires, and then we can face obstacles, and we will face obstacles that get in the way. And sometimes I worry that we can think that just because we've hit an obstacle, that we think our task is done. We're relieved of that responsibility. It relieves us of what we are intended to accomplish. But are we willing to get creative? Are we willing to bust through those obstacles when we face them? And sometimes these obstacles that we face, like, they seem impossible. They seem insurmountable. They seem like an impossible thing to do. But if you think about it, everything that we do in ministry here at this church is sort of in the realm of impossible. But as you probably heard, obviously with God, all things are possible. So even those things that maybe seem impossible, seem like this is too big of an obstacle for us to overcome, all things with God are possible. There is a way around that. There is a way to get through the roof. Mark chapter 2, let's go there for a minute. Let's spend some time there together. Mark chapter 2, let's read again in verse 1. Here's where Mark writes, and this is after, I love the Gospel of Mark, I love the way that that it gets through the Gospel. He goes pretty quickly from story to story, and we've seen in Mark chapter 1, a whole lot has taken place. We've seen Jesus teaching and healing, doing miraculous things, doing amazing things that people are just in awe at. And then in Mark chapter 2, we get into another one of these situations where he's about to perform this incredible miracle, do this amazing thing. Mark chapter 2, verse 1. A few days later, when Jesus again entered Capernaum, the people heard that he had come home. So many gathered that there was no room left, not even outside the door. And he preached the word to them. Then verse 3, we get this side story about these men coming to hear Jesus, coming to do something specifically when they see Jesus. Verse 3, some men came, bringing to him a paralytic, carried by four of them. Since they could not get him to Jesus because of the crowd, they made an opening in the roof above Jesus, and after digging through it, lowered the mat the paralyzed man was lying on. When Jesus saw their faith, he said to the paralytic, "Son, your sins are forgiven." So this is an amazing story. We've got Jesus, he's speaking. There's a packed house. There's no room. The outside is covered. There's no way in, right? There's no way in. We're told that here in the story. There's no way into the house. And so the men that have brought their paralyzed friend, who I imagine they love and care about, because this would probably be a very challenging, difficult task to do. The men that have brought this man to Jesus, they couldn't get in because of the crowd. And I want you to like imagine this scenario. Sometimes I think, you know, we can lose sight of the fact that this happened. Like we can treat Bible stories almost like bedtime stories, but this really did happen, this story here. And so imagine just people everywhere, no way to get in. It probably looks something like, you know, a Walmart on Black Friday, right? But just covered with people, too many people to get in. And it says here that there is no way for them to do it. And so if I were, if you were maybe a part of this four-man crew carrying this man, you might think, man, it's packed. Sorry, you know, we tried. There's no way in. We can't do it. And maybe, like, let's say the father of this paralyzed man, maybe he had asked these friends to do this for him. Like, hey, Jesus is in town. We hear he's performing miracles and doing amazing things. Take my son. Maybe this happened. Take my son to him so that he can be healed and so he can walk again. And so let's say they get there and it's packed. And, you know, if they were to take this man back to his father and like, listen, we tried. It was just too full. We couldn't get in. Would that father understand? He probably would. He'd probably be like, you know, listen, thank you for trying. I know you guys did your best. I know you did everything you could. There was no way you could get into the house. But there's something about these four men that I think that we can learn from. They were going to get a result no matter what it took. They were going to do everything they could to get their friend to Jesus. You know, there'd be good enough reason to say, like, we can't get in that house. And, you know, we carried our friend all this way here on a mat. We tried to get through here, but sorry, there's no more banana bread. There's no more room in the U-Haul for luggage. There's no room in the house. You can't get in the house. There's no way to do this. I'm sorry. But these four men come up, and they are awesome. I mean, what a crazy plan they come up with. It's like, hey, let's climb up on the roof, and we're going to dig a hole and lower our friend through the roof. This sounds like a plan that a college-aged person came up with, right? I mean, this is crazy for them to do this. You know, if I own that house, like, don't do that to my house, right? We'll make a way. But this is the way they came up with to get their friend to Jesus, to dig a hole and to go through the roof. And there's a very important reason why they came up with this plan, and it's this. Getting their friend to Jesus was too important to give up on. I mean, if you think about it, how long had they carried this man to get there? They had to be exhausted, right? They had to be exhausted to bring him here. How did they, you know, dig that hole? Did they decide before leaving, like, hey, let's just happen to throw a shovel on the mat here with us just in case we need it? We don't know. I mean, where did they get the rope from? Where did they get the supplies? Who knows? But they came up with this plan to go through the roof because they were going to do whatever they could to get their friend to Jesus. So the key here, the key thought is this. Listen, they thought to themselves, we are going to make this happen. They had a task. They had a goal. They had a mission. It looked impossible, but they decided we're going to dig a hole and go through the roof. And notice too, like they didn't lower the man in the back of the house. Where did they lower him? Right in front of Jesus. They're pretty bold. Lower, and you know, whatever, I don't know what that looks like. If it's like you tie the ropes to him, it's like 3, 2, 1, so, you know, sorry. Okay, or however that works, where they lower this man right in front of Jesus. And it stopped the meeting. And a miracle needed to be performed there. And we see Jesus, he doesn't really do maybe what the men had brought them there, this man there for originally. Like, he doesn't heal him and have him get up and walk right away. What does he do? Well, he forgives them of their sins. He forgives this man of his sins. And if you look back, why does he forgive this man of his sins? Well, it says in verse 5, when Jesus saw their faith, I think including or talking about specifically the faith of the friends. This led to there was something about these men and their willingness to go through the roof, to go above and beyond expectations, to meet an obstacle and decide, you know what, I'm not going to let this obstacle get in the way of me bringing my friend to Jesus so that they can be healed and ultimately lead, maybe whether they knew it or not, lead to their sins being forgiven. They weren't going to let anything stand in their way of bringing this person they cared about to Jesus. And so my question for you this morning is, how much are we like these four men? How much are you like these four men? Are we doing whatever we can to accomplish our goal? Are we doing whatever we can to bring people to Jesus? Are we doing whatever we can to bring people that we love to Jesus? People that we care about. And maybe we face reasonable obstacles. Things that we face and we're like, get through this. Whether it's too many people, you know, but in this story here, they found another way. They didn't let that obstacle stop them through the roof. And their mindset was the same mindset up here. This is too important to give up on. You are too important to give up on. How many times do we let reasonable obstacles, reasonable things, get in the way of us accomplishing our goal, of us bringing people, bringing someone, bringing friends, family? And they might be very reasonable, like, I don't have enough time. It's going to be awkward. I don't know what to say. Someone else will do it. I mean, they know what they should do, and so I'm just not going to bring it up because, you know, this is a time for family here. This is not the time to bring it up. It's too late for that person. Might think, I don't want to hurt the relationship. All of these sound like very reasonable things that could prevent us from maybe bringing someone or helping someone come to know Jesus. All of these are reasonable things to say. And this is a challenge for myself. This is a challenge I think for all Christians is found in this passage here. To be like these four men. To go through the roof. To go above, to go beyond obstacles and to find a solution. Someone that was great at this was Paul. If you got a Bible, flip over to Romans chapter 9. Romans chapter 9, up here as well. So, in Romans chapter 9, Paul here is, and I love this passage, Paul here is telling about something that he's very passionate about. And we can see his passion for it in the first verse of Romans chapter 9. Listen to what he says. He says, I speak the truth in Christ. I am not lying. My conscience confirms it. And the Holy Spirit. So three different ways, he says kind of the same thing. He says, listen, what I'm about to tell you is important and it is true. And so what is this thing that's so important? Well, look at verse 2. Paul says, I have great sorrow and unceasing anguish in my heart. Okay, so he's sad. He's experiencing anguish, which is not a word that I use that often, but I think we know the meaning of it. It's like sadness that is painful, right? And this great sorrow and unceasing anguish, he's feeling it in his heart. And that word unceasing there, I mean, what does that mean? It means it never goes away. And so for Paul, there is something that is causing him the sadness on his heart that is always there with him. And so I imagine whatever it is that's making him this sad, and maybe you already know what's making him so sad, but this thing that's causing him unceasing anguish, he probably thought about it all the time. He probably thought about it when he traveled down the road. He probably thought about it when he went to bed at night, before he had a meal, when he had a quiet moment to himself, when he was around family members for holidays, right? This was probably something that he was thinking about, was this anguish, this sadness that was on his heart. So what is he sad about? Well, we find out in verse 3. He says this, "For I could wish that I myself were cursed and cut off from Christ." Sounds pretty extreme, right? Why would anybody say that? Why would Paul say, for I could wish that I myself were cursed and cut off from Christ? It goes on, he says, for the sake of my brothers, those of my own race, the people of Israel. And so here's the thing that was causing Paul this constant sorrow and sadness. And it's this. There were other Jews, there were people that he loved, there were probably people that were family members of him, his brothers, right? People that he cared about, people that he was concerned about, that did not know Jesus. And he thought about it all the time. And it made him, probably like maybe it's made you in the past, this person that you care about, whoever that might be, made him sad to think about the fact that they did not know Jesus. Think about who that person is in your life. I have people like that that I care about who don't know Jesus. And it makes you wonder, did Paul ever get to a point where he was like, you know what? It's a lost cause. Like these people that I love, these people I care about, they are just never going to get it. And so I'm just going to stop worrying about it. I'm going to stop doing something about it. No, I don't think that's the case at all. I believe, and there's another verse I think that will illustrate this, that Paul would do everything that he could. he would go through the roof to bring people to meet Jesus. And the reason for that is because it is that important. It is that important not to give up on. Those people were that important to not give up on. And the people in your life are that important to not give up on. Whoever that is, that it causes you this sadness in your heart because maybe they don't know Jesus, don't give up on that person. Maybe you've come into obstacles that is preventing you from having that impact that you're wanting to have. Find a way to go around it. Find a way to go through the roof and to go above and beyond the expectations that are there when it comes to sharing Jesus with that person. One more passage to look at in 1 Corinthians chapter 9, verse 19 through 23. Here's what Paul writes. The same Paul that talked about these people that he was so upset because they didn't know Jesus. Here's what he says, which I think speaks to how he was to go above and beyond to find a way to bring them to Jesus. It says, though I am free and belong to no one, I have made myself a slave to everyone to win as many as possible. To the Jews, I became like a Jew to win the Jews. To those under the law, I became like one under the law, though I myself am not under the law, so as to win those under the law. To those not having the law, I became like one not having the law, though I am not free from God's law, but am under Christ's law. Why? So as to win those not having the law. Verse 22, to the weak, I became weak. Why? To win the weak. I have become all things to all people so that by all possible means I might save some. I do all this for the sake of the gospel that I may share in its blessing. Paul was willing to do whatever he could, short of sinning, right? Willing to do anything. Anything to win people to Christ. I bet you if Paul, in the state he's in here, if he was with that group of men bringing the paralyzed man to Jesus, he'd be one of the ones leading the charge to go up and go through the roof. He'd find another way. And so for you, are you willing to go through the roof? Are you willing to, even if you come into an obstacle that prevents you maybe in some way, that does not relieve you of your responsibility. That does not relieve me of my responsibility. We need to find ways to go and to win these people to Jesus, to show them His love so that they can come to know Him on a personal relationship. This is too important to give up on. You are too important to give up on. One quick story. When Crystal and I don't think I've told this before. Sorry if I have. Crystal and I, after we first got married, it was the end of our first summer in youth ministry when we were in Memphis. And so we decided to celebrate. And so we went to a restaurant. That's her favorite type of restaurant. It's a hibachi place. If you've ever been to hibachi, you know it's amazing. It's kind of a show and dinner, okay? And so you sit at a table and you're sitting with people you don't know, typically, unless you have a big group. And so the two of us were sitting at a table with six other people we didn't know. Our chef comes out and he was amazing. Like he's, you know, doing a choo-choo train with onions, which is just, I have probably too much joy in that. He flips an egg up in the air and catches it in his pocket or his hat. I mean, it's a lot of fun, okay? And one of the things, this guy was great. He was really interacting with us. And so at one point, he was going around and asking us, you know, what do you do for a living? And I was the last person, so he came to me and I said, well, you know, I'm a minister at a church. I work at a church. And usually when that gets brought up, like one of two things happen. One, it will either kill the conversation immediately and gets kind of awkward. Or two, like they will share something about their church background and church experience. And maybe they're excited to share that with you. In this case, it was kind of an unusual one. He heard that I worked at a church and he kind of stopped and he said, you know what? I've always planned on trying that Christian thing. You know, I've always wanted to become a Christian. So my ears perked up. He said, but there's some things that I need to get right in my life first. There's some things that I need to get right first before I can make that decision. And I wanted to be like, no, you've got this all wrong. Like, obviously he had it backwards. You don't make things right and then become a Christian. You come to know Jesus and you allow him to make things right in your life. That's how it works. But yet he, it seems, had made this obstacle for himself to prevent him from making the most important decision he needed to make, which was to become a Christian. He had decided, you know what? I've got to get things figured out first. Then once I do that, we'll remove that obstacle and I can become a Christian. But my worry and concern is that that will always be an obstacle to him deciding to become a Christian. This morning, maybe there is an obstacle that's getting in the way of you and your relationship with God. And maybe it seems reasonable. Like maybe the reason you don't feel close to God right now is because of some awful thing that's happened in your life. Or because you're stressed out. Or because you're so busy you don't have time for that relationship. And you can convince yourself like, oh, this is a reasonable reason why I feel this way, why I'm not close to God right now. And you think, you know, I'm going to take care of that first. I'm going to make that right first, and then, you know, my relationship with God will be wonderful. That's not the way it works. We need to bring that to God first, especially if we've never become a Christian. The way that things get made right in our life is for Him to do that, not us. We don't make those changes. God makes those changes inside of us. And this morning, maybe there's some change you need to make. Maybe there's an obstacle you need removed. Maybe you've thought before sometimes, like, hey, I'm going to make that decision to become a Christian soon. And you've always found a reason why not to do that. Don't let there be an obstacle to you making that choice any longer. Maybe this morning you need some prayers and encouragement. Maybe because there's someone in your life that you really want to reach. You want to be like one of those friends carrying them to Jesus, and maybe you bump into problems and issues that prevent that from happening. Go through the roof. Find another way. Find a way to get them to Jesus. And I think that starts with prayer. I think that starts with maybe getting with other people who can help you in doing exactly what needs to be done. And so this morning I want to challenge you to, instead of maybe letting those obstacles prevent you from decisions you need to make, to go above and beyond what might hold you back, to go through the roof. It's too important not to. So this morning, maybe there's something on your heart and you need prayers, you need encouragement, maybe you need to become a Christian for the very first time. We want to give you that opportunity to do that this morning as together we stand and sing.